Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're taking a deep dive into something utterly vital, yet, you know, often unseen, working tirelessly inside you, the cardiovascular system.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission, really drawing from the incredible insights of Dr. Hoffman's lecture, is to cut through the complexity and give you those aha moments about how your heart and vessels actually keep you going.
It is truly fascinating how Dr. Hoffman's work helps us see what seems like maybe a single system as this complex network of interconnected parts.
Right.
We're going to explore not just what these parts are, but maybe more importantly, why they function the way they do. It reveals this remarkable engineering that powers your very existence.
Absolutely. You might think it's just heart and blood vessels, maybe pretty simple.
Right.
But this deep dive, informed by Dr. Hoffman, reveals so much more. From its surprising real estate in your chest to how it actually operates as two pumps in one.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready to view your internal engine in a whole new light. So let's truly unpack the heart itself. We often talk about the cardiovascular system, but what's kind of eye-opening is realizing it's just one crucial piece of the much broader circulatory system.
Which includes the blood itself, yeah.
Exactly. And this cardiovascular piece specifically zeroes in on the pump and, well, its plumbing.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's really about understanding its place in the grand scheme of your body. The heart, while it's central, isn't actually one of your 11 organ systems in that traditional classification.
Oh, interesting.
It's the main organ within its own unique setup. It sits, you know, snugly between your two lungs in a dedicated spot in the thorax called the mediastinum.
Mediastinum, right.
And just like your lungs are enveloped by their pleura, the heart's protected by its own membrane, the pericardium. It's really its own self-contained unit.
And what's truly fascinating, I think, about the heart's anatomy is that it's not perfectly symmetrical, is it? Or straight up and down?
Not at all. It's angled diagonally. The pointed end, the apex, points down towards your lower left.
Uh-huh.
And get this. Most of the heart really does lie to the left of your midline.
Wow.
And this is precisely why your left lung is actually a bit smaller than your right one.
It makes room for it.
It cleverly makes room for the heart. Exactly.
That makes sense.
And this specific positioning and the structures around it, they highlight this incredible design for efficiency. That pericardium, the membrane around the heart, it isn't just a simple sac.
Right.
As Dr. Hoffman clarified, it's a serious membrane.
Yeah.
That means two layers, parietal and visceral, with this thin, watery pericardial fluid in between.
Like a lubricant.
Exactly like a lubricant. Perfectly engineered grease, really. It lets the heart beat and move continuously without any friction against everything around it, including your lungs, which are also moving all the time.
Okay, so now let's venture inside. Dr. Hoffman shows us the heart isn't just, you know, one big empty space. It's a powerful muscular pump, actually like two pumps in one, divided into four distinct chambers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first clues to how they work is that their walls aren't all the same thickness.
Indeed. The heart wall itself has three main layers. The epicardium is the protective outer layer. Then comes the thick, powerful myocardium. That's the actual cardiac muscle, different from skeletal muscle.
Right, the workhorse.
Exactly. And finally, the endocardium, which is the smooth inner lining of the chambers, the part that's directly touching the blood.
And those four chambers are arranged, two atria at the top and two ventricles below. Dr. Hoffman describes the atria almost like receiving stations, open at the top to collect blood coming back in veins.
Mm-hmm, the entry points.
But here's the crucial part, right? The walls of the ventricles are significantly thicker than the atrial walls. And the left ventricle, that one's even thicker, more muscular than the right.
And that striking difference in thickness points directly to the different power demands of each chamber, the atria. They only need enough oomph to push blood a short way into the ventricles right next door. The thin walls.
Makes sense.
But the ventricles have a much tougher job. They need to propel blood over much longer distances. The right ventricle pumps blood just to the lungs, relatively short circuit.
Okay.
But the left ventricle, it has to push blood through the entire rest of your body, everything else.
Wow. Right.
Which explains why it boasts such a profoundly thicker, more powerful muscular wall. It needs that power.
So the heart's pumping. But where's all that blood actually going?
Hmm.
Dr. Hoffman lays out the three main kinds of blood vessels, arteries, veins, and capillaries. And he corrects a common misconception right away.
That's right. This is important for clarity. Dr. Hoffman stresses that arteries always carry blood away from the heart, always away.
Okay.
And veins always carry blood toward the heart, always toward. It's not really about whether the blood is oxygenated or deoxygenated.
Oh, okay.
Because, as we'll see, there are important exceptions to that oxygen rule, depending on which circuit we're talking about.
Got it. And you can actually see structural differences that match their jobs, right? Arteries, Dr. Hoffman explains, have much thicker, more muscular walls than veins.
Mm-hmm, more robust.
This allows them to actively constrict, vasoconstrict, or relax vasodilate.
Yeah.
Which helps control blood flow to different tissues.
Right, directing traffic.
Whereas veins, they have thinner walls and operate under much lower pressure.
And given that lower pressure in veins, there's a really critical adaptation Dr. Hoffman points out. Veins have internal valves. You don't find those in arteries.
Valves. Okay. Why?
Well, these valves are essential to stop blood from flowing backward, especially important when blood has to move up against gravity, say from your legs, or when your muscles squeeze the veins.
All right.
It's a remarkable design. And actually, your skeletal muscles play a vital role here. When you move, like walk or run, your muscles squeeze on these valved veins. It acts as a kind of second pump, helping push blood back to your heart.
That's fascinating. A muscle pump.
Exactly. A skeletal muscle pump.
And then there are the capillaries. Tiny, right. The smallest vessels of all.
Microscopic, yeah. Mm. Dr. Hoffman describes their walls as just one cell thick. Incredibly delicate.
Wow.
But this super thin structure is absolutely essential because this is where the real action happens. The vital exchange of gases, oxygen out, CO2 in, plus nutrients, waste products, all between your blood and your body's tissues.
The exchange points.
Okay.
So, with all this pumping, how does the heart make sure blood only flows in one direction? It needs, like, really good traffic control.
It does.
And that's where Dr. Hoffman highlights these four crucial valves, which fall into two main types.
What's really fascinating here are the atrioventricular valves, or AV valves. They sit right between the atria and ventricles, one on the right, one on the left.
Okay.
The right AV valve is called the tricuspid valve, because it has three little flaps or leaflets.
Got it, three parts.
And the left AV valve with two parts is the bicuspid valve, sometimes called the mitral valve. Looks a bit like a bishop's mitre, apparently.
Huh.
These valves open downward, letting blood flow from the atria into the ventricles.
But here's a key detail Dr. Hoffman points out.
Okay.
When those super powerful ventricles squeeze.
Yeah, that big contraction.
You absolutely do not want blood shooting back up into the atria.
Definitely not. That would be inefficient.
So the AV valves have these clever little ropes, connective tissue cords called chordae tendinae.
Chordae tendinae, yeah.
And they're anchored to the ventricular wall. They act like tethers, basically. They stop the valve flaps from blowing backward when the pressure builds up.
Like little parachutes, holding them steady. So clever.
It really is.
The other category, as Dr. Hoffman describes, are the semilunar valves, named for their shape, like half moons.
Semilunar.
These are located between the ventricles and the major arteries they pump into. The right semilunar valve, or pulmonary semilunar valve controls, flow into the pulmonary trunk, heading to the lungs.
No.
And the left semilunar valve, the aortic semilunar valve controls, flow into the big one, the aorta.
Going to the whole body.
Exactly. And unlike the AV valves, these open upward, and significantly, they do not have those chordae tendineae. They don't need them because of the way pressure works there.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. Hoffman's lecture really drove home this idea of the heart being two pumps in one, because it's managing two separate but equally critical blood flow circuits.
Mm-hmm. And it raises the question, why two circuits? Why not just one big loop?
Good question.
Well, the pulmonary circuit is handled by the right side of your heart. Deoxygenated blood, blood that's dropped off its oxygen to your tissues, comes back from your body into the right atrium.
Okay.
Goes to the right ventricle and then gets pumped up to your lungs.
Just the lungs.
Just the lungs. In the capillaries there, CO2 is released, you breathe it out, and vital oxygen is picked up. Turns the blood that nice bright red. Then this newly oxygenated blood returns, but it returns to the left side of your heart. It's a remarkably short, efficient loop, focused solely on gas exchange.
Okay, so that's circuit one. What about the other pump?
That's the systemic circuit, powered by the strong left side of your heart. This is where that oxygenated blood, fresh from the lungs, leaves the left atrium, goes into that super strong left ventricle.
The thick-walled one.
The really thick-walled one, yeah. And then gets powerfully pushed out through the aorta to every other part of your body. Brain, toes, kidneys, muscles, everything.
Wow.
Which explains again why that left ventricle wall is so thick. It's a much longer, far more complex journey, delivering oxygen and nutrients everywhere and picking up waste products along the way.
But Dr. Hoffman mentioned a third one too, right? Something often overlooked.
Yes. Critically important, the coronary circuit. it might seem a bit weird that the heart, which is literally full of blood all the time, needs its own dedicated blood supply.
Yeah, you'd think it could just take some from inside.
You would, but the heart muscle itself, the myocardium, is simply too thick for oxygen and nutrients to just diffuse in from the chambers fast enough. It needs its own plumbing.
Ah, yep.
So coronary arteries branch directly off the aorta right near the start, bringing fresh oxygenated blood right to the heart muscle cells. And then coronary veins drain the deoxygenated blood back, usually into the right atrium. It's the heart feeding itself, basically, to keep the whole show running.
That's incredible. Okay, so how does this amazing pump actually know when to squeeze? It's not like our brain is telling it, beat now, beat now.
Right, it has its own control system. Dr. Hoffman explains that the heart has its own sophisticated built-in electrical system. It's made of specialized excitable tissues that create and transmit action potentials, basically electrical signals.
Like its own little power grid.
Exactly. And the sequence here is incredible, really precise. It all starts with the sinoatrial node, the SA node. It's located up in the right atrium. Dr. Hoffman calls it the heart's natural pacemaker because it sets the rhythm, sets the pace. It generates that initial electrical spark.
The starting gun.
Pretty much. This signal then spreads super rapidly across both atria, causing them to contract almost simultaneously, and that pushes blood down into their respective ventricles.
Okay, so atria contract first, but you mentioned timing is key.
Absolutely critical. Here's where it's clever. The signal then arrives at the atrioventricular node, or AV node. It's like a junction box between the atria and ventricles.
Uh-huh.
This AV node doesn't just pass the signal along, it actually delays it slightly, just for a fraction of a second.
A delay? Why would it do that?
It's perfectly choreographed. That tiny delay gives the atria enough time to fully finish their contraction, completely emptying their blood into the ventricles before the ventricles get the signal to start their big squeeze. Ensures maximum filling.
Wow, okay. Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Now, this raises the question. How does that signal then spread through those big muscular ventricles quickly enough to get a coordinated, effective pump?
Yeah, they're much bigger than the atria.
Right. So after the AV node, the signal travels really fast down a pathway called the atrioventricular bundle, or bundle of His.
All right.
Then it splits into right and left bundle branches, which run down inside the wall separating the ventricles, the interventricular septum.
Mm.
And finally, these branches connect to a network of Purkinje fibers that spread throughout the ventricle walls.
Purkinje fibers.
Okay. And this whole pathway, as Dr. Hoffman explained, is designed to ensure the signal reaches the apex, the bottom tip of the ventricles first.
From the bottom up.
Exactly. It causes the ventricles to contract from the bottom up, which is the most efficient way to squeeze the blood upward and out through those semilunar valves into the pulmonary artery and aorta, like squeezing toothpaste from the bottom of the tube.
That's a great analogy. Okay, so all these precisely timed electrical signals lead to the actual heartbeat, right? The rhythm. Dr. Hoffman broke it down into two main phases, diastole and systole.
That's right. Diastole refers to the heart's relaxation phase, when the heart muscles are not contracting.
Okay, relaxing.
During this crucial time, all four chambers are relaxed. Blood is flowing passively into the atria from the big veins, the vena cava and pulmonary veins. And because the AV valves are open, blood even starts spilling down into the ventricles, filling them up about 70-80%. It's the heart's refill phase, getting ready.
Okay, diastole is refill. Then comes systole.
Then comes systole, which means contraction. First you get atrial systole. That electrical signal spreads across the atria, they contract, and they squeeze that last bit of blood, maybe 20-30%, into the ventricles, topping them off.
Right, finish filling.
Exactly. Then, a moment later, thanks to that AV node delay we talked about,
mm-hmm.
The ventricles get their signal and begin ventricular systole. Now, initially, Dr. Hoffman points out, this is something called isovolumetric contraction.
Isovolumetric, meaning?
Yeah, same volume. The ventricle muscle starts to contract, pressure inside skyrockets, but because both the AV valves and the semilunar valves are closed for a split second, the volume of blood inside isn't changing yet. Pressure's just building.
Okay, building pressure.
Building, building, until the pressure inside the ventricle gets higher than the pressure in the aorta or pulmonary trunk, and then the semilunar valves burst open, and that begins the powerful ejection phase as blood is forcefully pushed out into the pulmonary trunk and the aorta. That's the main pumping action we think of.
Wow. That whole cycle, contraction and relaxation, just repeats over and over.
Constantly. Billions of times in a lifetime.
Incredible. Yeah. Now, beyond just the heart as a pump, Dr. Hoffman also talked about blood pressure.
Right.
How it changes as blood moves through the system and how the body decides where to send blood.
Yeah, the regulation side is just as fascinating. The journey of blood pressure is really interesting. It's highest, as you'd expect, right in the aorta, immediately after that powerful left ventricle pushes it out.
Maximum force.
Maximum force. Then it gradually, predictably drops as blood moves further away through arteries, then smaller arterioles, then the tiny capillaries, then small venules, and finally back through the veins towards the heart.
Okay, so it decreases along the way.
Steadily decreases. And in the arteries, you can actually feel that difference between the peak pressure during systole contraction and the lower pressure during diastole relaxation. That's your pulse pressure, that throbbing you feel.
Ah, the pulse. Right.
But by the time blood gets all the way to the capillaries, that pulse pressure is essentially gone. The flow becomes smooth and continuous, which is vital, actually, for efficient exchange of gases and nutrients. You don't want pulsing flow in those delicate capillaries.
That makes sense. Continuous flow for exchange.
Right.
Now, this brings up a really critical point about overall body function that Dr. Hoffman highlighted with a great analogy.
Yes, the toilet flushing analogy.
Right. Imagine everyone in a huge city flushing their toilet at the exact same time.
The water pressure would plummet, right?
Yeah.
Not enough supply for that demand all at once.
Exactly. And similarly, your body never perfuses meaning, sends blood through all its tissues at maximum flow simultaneously.
You simply don't have enough blood volume to do that. If all your capillary beds opened wide at the same time, your blood pressure would drop catastrophically. You'd go into shock.
So how does the body manage this? How does it direct blood where it's needed most?
Brilliantly, actually. Dr. Hoffman described these tiny rings of smooth muscle called precapillary sphincters. They're like little gatekeepers located right at the entrance to the capillary beds, branching off arterioles.
Precapillary sphincters, okay.
When these sphincters contract, they tighten up and can effectively shut off or significantly reduce blood flow into that specific capillary bed.
Like turning off a tap.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And when that happens, blood is forced to bypass that capillary bed, taking a shortcut through something called a vascular shunt directly from the arteriole over to a venule and then back into the venous system.
Ah, bypass route.
Exactly. And this ingenious system allows your body to precisely control and redirect blood flow. So, after a big meal, the sphincters in your digestive system relax, letting lots of blood flow there for absorption.
Right.
But maybe during intense exercise, those sphincters might constrict while the ones in your muscles relax, sending more blood to your working muscles. It's constant dynamic regulation.
That's incredibly sophisticated. Okay, beyond the main pulmonary and systemic circuits, Dr. Hoffman also introduced a couple of really unique and vital blood flow systems.
Yeah.
Specialized routes.
Yes, a couple of really neat ones. One is the Circle of Willis. It's this amazing circular arrangement of arteries right at the base of your brain.
Circle of Willis. Why is that important?
Well, Dr. Hoffman emphasized the brain's absolutely critical, nonstop need for oxygen and glucose. Unlike other tissues, the brain can't really store them, and it can't use fat for fuel effectively. It needs a constant supply.
Got it. High demand.
Very high demand. This circle acts as a vital safety net, a lifeline. If one of the major arteries supplying your brain, say, one of your carotid arteries in your neck gets partially or fully blocked.
Okay, like in a stroke situation.
Potentially, yeah. The Circle of Willis can often reroute blood flow from the other connected arteries around the blockage, maintaining blood supply to the affected brain area. It's an indispensable backup system, truly a marvel of biological redundancy.
Wow, a built-in backup for the brain. That's crucial. And then there was another unusual one, a portal system. Specifically, the hepatic portal system.
Ah, yes, the hepatic portal system. This one is truly unique in its structure. As Dr. Hoffman explained, normally, blood goes artery, capillary, bed, vein, heart. One capillary bed.
Right. Standard route.
But in a portal system, the pattern is different. It's artery, capillary, bed, #1, portal, vein, capillary, bed, #2, vein, heart. There are two capillary beds in series before the blood gets back to the main circulation.
Two capillary beds. Why would you need that?
Well, connecting this to the bigger picture, the hepatic portal system, hepatic means liver, is a brilliant adaptation related to digestion. Blood flows from arteries to the first set of capillaries, which are in your stomach and intestines.
Okay, picking up nutrients.
Exactly. Picking up all the nutrients you just absorbed from your food, but also, potentially, toxins, bacteria, things you ingested that aren't so good.
Ah.
Now, instead of that nutrient-rich and potentially toxin-rich blood going straight back to your heart and getting pumped everywhere,
right,
the veins from your digestive organs collect into one large vein, the hepatic portal vein, and this vein goes directly to the liver, where it branches out into a second set of capillaries within the liver tissue.
So it goes to the liver before the rest of the body.
Precisely. This ensures that the liver's specialized cells, the hepatocytes, get the first pass at everything absorbed from your gut. They can process the nutrients, store glucose, synthesize proteins, etc. And critically, they can filter out and detoxify harmful substances like alcohol or bacterial toxins before that blood enters your general circulation.
It's like a built-in quality control and processing plant right after absorption.
Exactly. A detoxification center, a nutrient processing hub. It's vital for protecting the rest of your body.
It's amazing. Okay, so to kind of round things out, Dr. Hoffman's lecture also gave us a bit of a map, showing some of the major arteries and veins, the superhighways of this network.
Yeah, it really makes you appreciate the sheer scale of this internal plumbing system. We don't need to memorize every single name, of course, but some key players stand out.
Like the aorta.
Definitely the aorta. Yeah. The largest artery in the body. It makes that famous U-turn bend, the aortic arch, right after leaving the heart.
Uh-huh.
And then it descends down through your chest and abdomen, sending off major branches to supply organs like the kidneys, those with the renal arteries, or branching further down to supply your legs via the iliac arteries. It's the main trunk line.
And on the vein side, bringing blood back.
On the vein side, the largest ones are the vena cava. There's the superior vena cava, which collects all the deoxygenated blood from your head, neck, arms, and upper chest.
Okay, upper body.
And the inferior vena cava, which collects blood from basically everything below your diaphragm, legs, abdomen, pelvis.
Lower body.
Right. And both of these huge veins empty directly into the right atrium of the heart, completing the circuit, ready for the trip to the lungs again.
Wow. It's such an intricate, continuous loop. So what does all this really mean for you, listening? Our deep dive today, guided by Dr. Hoffman's insights, reveals this cardiovascular system as, well, a true marvel of biological engineering, a continuous dynamic system. Pumps, pipes, intricate electrical controls, valves, all working tirelessly every single second just to keep you alive.
Yeah, from the precise timing of those electrical signals we talked about to the strategic routing of blood with those sphincters, it's really a profound testament to the body's incredible design. And its resilience, too.
It really is. And this raises, I think, an important question for you to ponder. Consider how your daily lifestyle choices, you know, the food you eat, how much you move, managing stress, how all that directly impacts the efficiency and the long-term health of this very intricate system.
Absolutely. Everything from the sheer strength of your left ventricle muscle to the health and responsiveness of those tiny precapillary sphincters. It's all influenced by how you live.
Yeah.
Understanding this fundamental system really provides a powerful lens, doesn't it, for viewing and hopefully nurturing your own well-being.
Precisely. The heart isn't just a simple pump. It's this incredible symphony of coordinated actions.
Mm-hmm.
From tiny fluid-filled membranes allowing frictionless movement to life-saving backup routes like the Circle of Willis, Dr. Hoffman's lecture gives you a fantastic shortcut to truly appreciating its complexity and, its robustness. Keep diving into curiosity, folks, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.